you have the chance to win a Spring Super Sweeps from LAist. Donate $60 for one entry to win a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Check out all the other prizes too when you donate now at laist.com/sweeps.
From the Moon Broadcast Center, this is Air Talk on 89.3 KTCC. I'm Sharon McNary, filling in for Larry this week as he takes a well-deserved vacation. A little bit later this hour, Congressman Adam Schiff joins us to respond to reports that the Trump Department of Justice subpoenaed his data records. Plus, we'll explore the history of the Juneteenth holiday, which Congress just passed a law designating a national holiday, and talk about its origins, why it matters now, and how LA is celebrating. But first, joining us for our daily update on COVID-19 is Shruti Gohil, a professor of medicine and associate medical director for epidemiology and infection prevention at UC Irvine's School of Medicine. Dr. Gohil, thank you for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
So let's just jump into California's big reopening. What is the feeling in the medical community? I mean, you guys have been just working nonstop. Is there finally some relief or perhaps nervous anticipation for the possibility of another surge of COVID?
No, we definitely see the cases coming down is a huge encouragement to us. And now, you know, increasingly as we're seeing across the nation, the people that are coming in really to the hospital are those who are unvaccinated. We've had many weeks now with very minimal COVID, active COVID cases, and that's just encouraging overall.
So most of the people who are coming in ill are those who did not go out and get the vaccination. Are you hearing specific reasons why they did not get the vaccination? I mean, do they have good reasons to have not done that?
Yeah, it's the same sort of thinking, I think, as even before COVID, the flu vaccine every year, we always struggled with getting our population vaccinated up. And this one, of course, in the setting of COVID, with a lot of the misinformation that is out there, honestly, I think that is one of the reasons that people will give when they say that they don't want to get vaccinated, or they'll give other things that the deep held beliefs that have been ongoing for a long time about vaccination. So it's really a mix, honestly, but all the same vaccination hesitancy that we have been seeing all season long since the beginning of the vaccines is still at play, unfortunately.
Even after all the deaths and all the illnesses and all the long COVID, well, how does that shape how you're personally going about the reopening? Are you keeping a mask on when you're indoors in public? What are you doing?
That's such a great question because, you know, and, you know, it kind of dovetails to your previous question, too. What are healthcare workers, you know, how do they feel and how are we going to go about, you know, and how has the new mask release of the mask mandate in California affected healthcare workers? So we live in two worlds, right? We live in the regular world and then healthcare. In healthcare, very little has changed in terms of what we need to do in patient care areas. We still will need to be masking up and then and doing our usual protection that we put into place in the setting of a pandemic, those will still stay in place in patient care areas. And now, you know, we leave our hospitals and we go into regular society. And what do? Well, most of us, thankfully, are fully vaccinated. And for example, I can speak for myself as fully vaccinated. I feel comfortable following the CDC guidance. You know, what we are seeing is exactly what we see with flu, is that the vaccine works. And this one works way better than most vaccines. And I feel comfortable without my mask in most circumstances. However, there are certain areas where I will definitely be using my mask, you know, where I know in public transport, right? Maybe in an airplane, maybe, of course, in the hospitals or homeless shelters. These are all, or even in schools.
Yeah, and those are all still required for you to wear it.
That's right.
Wow.
Right, exactly.
Well, I want to call out to our listeners, if you have medical questions related to COVID-19, we are taking your calls. We've got a qualified person here to answer them. Call 866-893-5722. You can also tweet at AirTalk or leave a comment on the Facebook page. Yeah, so a lot of restaurants and people in Southern California have seemed reluctant to ditch their masks with the reopening. Maybe they're having a little bit of PTSD. I still see people walking around in the street wearing masks. I went into my favorite thrift store yesterday after work, and there was a sign on the door that said mask optional, but I was like the only person who did not wear a mask. So, you know, the Times did some reporting and says that for many people, it's just still too early to ditch the mask. What do you think is going to help people gain enough trust now after 15 months of worry to really leave the mask behind?
Yeah, I think that seeing the rates stay low will probably help people. I think that there is concern, of course, as there always will be with the new variants coming in. I think we really do have to focus on this dichotomy between the vaccinated and the unvaccinated. So a lot of people who may be fearful of taking their mask off, maybe the unvaccinated individuals, that makes sense. If you're unvaccinated, you should be thinking more about the mask. If you're vaccinated and you're still worried about the mask, I think that those individuals may, you know, in some circumstances, you know, at the end of the day, masks also help with colds and flu, and that season is coming upon us. You may have already heard that we have a lot of other viruses that are creeping up this summer, and people are getting sick with already. Things other than COVID already, and, you know, and actually earlier than we would have expected. Usually happens more in the fall. So those things are happening. Those things are out there, and there are cultures around the world where you do wear masks to mitigate just regular old flu. So maybe some of these individuals will protect themselves from these other things.
Well, I mean, I can just imagine the kind of panic a parent might have, you know, a year and 2 months of very careful living. You drop the mask. I mean, we've been told that vaccinated parents can be in the house unmasked with their unvaccinated kids, and your kid comes up with a sniffle, a cold. Is the testing infrastructure still there where you can easily and quickly get a COVID test just to rule it out?
Yeah. There's lots of talk about how are we going to do this, and you know, in the cold and flu season. And yes, I think many health systems are. Gearing up to make sure that there are ample tests. So that's one good thing compared to the preparation went early on in the pandemic. We now do have escalated testing capacity.
I actually wonder if we have too much. I mean, they spent millions and millions of dollars on a test lab up in Valencia. I'm wondering if it's being fully used.
Yeah. I think it's a really important question because, you know, we don't have infinite resources. And sometimes common sense really is a critical point. And so when you do get a cold and flu and you know that the child could have something else that's circulating around, you know, you've been vaccinated, for example, you know, do you really need to be tested every single time? So this is a dialogue that we really need to work out between the medical community and our patients.
Yeah. Well, listeners, if you have medical questions related to COVID-19, give us your calls, 866-893-5722. Submit your questions for Dr. Gohil. We note a lot of studies around here, and a new one found nearly a quarter of COVID-19 patients who were at least 30 or more days after their initial diagnosis. Well, I'm actually not understanding that question very well. Oh, well, let's move on to the next one. So the University of California has announced that vaccines will now be mandatory in the fall. What do you make of that approach, mandatory vaccines?
Yeah, well, you know, we have precedent, don't we? We do have, you know, mandatory vaccines for a lot of things, MMR, right? Varicella, otherwise known as chickenpox. So those things have been recognized as important enough to require vaccination in most schools. And so this isn't that much of a shift. This is in recognition of the fact that we have a highly effective vaccine. It's working against most of the variants pretty darn well. And why wouldn't we mandate it so that we can really fully open up our colleges? The UC is mandating it for everybody.
And is there any kind of effective pushback for those who are really super serious about not wanting to get it?
You know, the medical exemptions on the writing of our policy at the UC is very, very limited, very, very few, you know, very clear reasons why, rationale, why you don't qualify for the vaccine. So, for example, religious exemptions are not accepted.
So RSH tweets at AirTalk asking this, what guidance do you have for people who have a suppressed immune system and are unsure if the vaccine is effective? How should they engage with the public? Now, you've said over and over, everybody has the vaccine is extremely effective. So let's discard that piece of it.
Suppressed
immune system, yeah.
Well, it is extremely effective, except that for those with weakened immune systems, the data are still emerging. Although, compared to the last time we talked about this on this show, we have had new data showing that, in fact, even immunocompromised individuals, do have some pretty darn good protection from the vaccine. So that's good. So that's one piece of there. I would, depending on your type, because immune compromise can be so broad. It can be as little as some people think of themselves as immunocompromised because they have diabetes or something, and some are malignancies where the bone can't even make any white cells. So that's an extreme, right? So depending on where you fall on that spectrum, you really should be talking to your doctor as to what you should do. In general, we do advise if you're serious immunocompromised, malignancy, chemotherapy, things that you're actively trying to avoid any type of infection. Even before COVID, we would ask patients to take precautions that included masking for some patients on chemotherapy. So you're going to need to be following that kind of rule anyway.
And with so much less virus circulating among the public, these people are actually going to be much safer going out now than they were, say, 8 months ago, correct?
Yes. Yeah. Very good perspective. Yeah.
So those of us who've gotten the vaccine are creating a little bit of a bubble for others. But then if you have unmasked people who have not been vaccinated, then that's the hazard if the immunocompromised person is not vaccinated.
Yeah. Wow. That's a key point.
So Keith posted on the AirTalk Facebook page. He says, I was vaccinated while undergoing chemo. Well, Keith, I wish you all the best in your recovery and treatment. He says, no side effects, but I was wondering about whether to test antibodies or get another shot later as a booster.
Oh, yes. This is an eternal question. Should we test for antibodies? And currently it's really hard to tell if vaccine antibodies, vaccine-associated antibodies alone are not a good indicator of your protection. So there's a whole other arm of your immune system. There's the B cells that make antibodies, and that we can check for. We have a blood test for that. But we don't have a blood test for your other arm of the immune system called the T cells. And that is critical. What we're finding is that the data shows that long after your B cells, your antibody level goes down, your T cells remember COVID from the vaccine, from the spike protein, and are ready to marshal themselves if you get challenged with the actual virus. So T cells, that immunity, we can't tell. So you should still feel, just getting the test from an antibody test won't tell you. It may confirm, if it's positive, it'll confirm for you, okay, your body did something. And so there is some benefit to go ahead and testing it. But if it's negative, what will you do? That doesn't mean you're not protected, actually.
Wow. And a question about, I guess they're calling it long COVID. So this new study found that nearly a quarter of COVID-19 patients had at least one post-COVID condition 30 or more days after their initial diagnosis. So what kinds of post-COVID conditions do we tend to see, and are there effective therapies for those conditions?
More and more coming out on this. Of course, fatigue is one of the main symptoms that patients seem to complain about, and shortness of, prolonged shortness of breath that is month or so after. And some even complain about some sort of muscle aches and pains as well. Those are the more common things that people complain of. Is there treatment for it? Not so much. It's all supportive treatment. So symptom-directed treatment for it. Generally speaking, it appears that most people get better over time. But no, there's no directed therapy at this time.
As an endurance athlete, my triathlon friends and I have been very worried about this prospect of long COVID, even if you had like an asymptomatic case. Is it possible to get the long COVID, the many post-COVID symptoms, you know, deterioration of the lungs, even if you had like a very mild case?
Yes, we are seeing that's lower rate. In general, it tends to be that the sicker you are and you are hospitalized, those are the people who get the long COVID pulmonary lung symptoms more often. And the asymptomatic or mildly symptomatic individuals don't seem to be as likely to get the lung type of long COVID as much as fatigue. Sometimes the mental fog that's being described and muscle aches and pains, though, yes, some proportion of them can also have this prolonged lung effect.
Well, if you have medical questions related to COVID for Dr. Golil, we'll take your calls after the break, 866-893-5722. You can also tweet at AirTalk or leave a comment on the Facebook page. And then just a quick word from Michael from Santa Monica. He's a physician. He thinks we're missing an opportunity with mask wearing. He says even the public realizes we had an extremely mild flu season last year. So he wants us to continue wearing masks. I have so many that I sewed, I think I'll be right there with him. What do you think about continued mask wearing, just really quickly?
Yeah, I was just, that was what I was referring to, all these other cultures around the world who've been doing this during cold and flu season, and they have less circulation. So there is something to be said for, hey, you got a cough, cover yourself. Right. Get or wear a mask if you think you're going to be in proximity of people who are actually sick.
And we'll be back with Dr. Gohill after this break, professor of medicine and associate medical director for epidemiology and infection prevention at UC Irvine School of Medicine, and taking your calls. Welcome back to Air Talk. I'm Sharon McNary, in for Larry Mantle today. And with me is Dr. Shruti Gohill, professor of medicine and associate medical director for epidemiology and infection prevention at UC Irvine School of Medicine. We're taking your questions relating to COVID at 866-893-5722. As the great reopening begins, you've got to have questions about how you're going to be in the world now after so long being out of it. You can tweet at Air Talk or leave a comment on the Facebook page. Let's talk quickly to Matthew. You've got a question about your kids.
Hi there.
Hey there.
Matthew in Beverly Hills, thank you for the great program today. I recognize that your guest is a physician, not an attorney, but I was curious as to within that community if there was any sense of what divorced parents can do about one wanting to get the child vaccinated and the other not. My father and my grandmother both passed from COVID in January and February, respectively, and my daughter's mother and her fiancé are anti-vaxxers, and we know now via contact tracing and antibody tests that it was likely my daughter that exposed them, and now they don't want to get the vaccine, and that's problematic, and I don't really have any good guidance on that, so.
Wow. Well, I am not an attorney either. I want to express empathy for the loss of your parents. I know how hard that can be to lose a loved one so recently. And to add on to that, the thorny legal issue, I'm guessing that you might have to find some legal help and possibly take it before before a court. Dr. Gohill, what's your experience when divorced parents disagree on the course of treatment for their kid?
Boy, I always think I've heard everything, but I hadn't heard that one. And I'm just so sorry to hear about what happened with your parents. It's just heartbreaking. And I've been there with many patients here in the hospital. And so there's that. And your question about the legal, of course, I can't comment on that. However, it's true that when we have discordance between individuals on what should happen for vaccination, I think that The key argument is about the overall safety of the family, and certainly the aspect of schools. We have yet to see whether or not it's going to be mandated at schools in general. I will, if it's any kind of from a medical perspective, there is some protection if your child had COVID, truly, then there is some antibody that he or she will have that will be protective against another repeat event. But it is true that once you get a booster, if you get a vaccine, that in children, it is possible that immunity might last so long not like flu, like you get it every year. So that's a really good argument to go ahead and get vaccinated as these variants come in. I think the hardest thing, of course there's legal, but I know mediation is probably one of the best things that could be done, if there's a mediator or something like that in between who can help negotiate through these aspects. I think that there's wisdom in that. And there's also whether you've been vaccinated or not, I don't know your status, but all the people that are around the child definitely get to have some kind of say in what should happen.
And medical ethics would advise against one parent just taking a kid to a doctor and getting a vaccination, wouldn't they?
Right.
I mean,
right.
It really does
That's
need to
exactly,
be worked
that
out.
That is a good point.
Wow.
It needs to be worked out. It should be within the scope of mediation, I would think,
Well, thank you for your question, yeah. Matthew. It certainly is a thorny one, and I wish you all the best as you work through this with your ex. James from Los Feliz says, I'm a hairdresser. I'm fully vaccinated. I plan to wear my mask for the whole year. Should I get tested for the T cells? Any advice would be great because I work in close proximity with clients. What about that? I do need a haircut.
Yeah. Oh, I've been waiting for years for a T cell study, an actual test. That is not available. There's no clinical test for the T cell arm at this time, but people are working on it. And what I would say is that if you've been fully vaccinated, I know you're in close proximity to so many people, I do think that you generally have a fair amount of protection. And depending on your personal circumstances, immune suppression, and you're going to be doing this work all day long in front of clients in close proximity. But then I think you should feel comfortable in doing what you need to do for masking. But I have to say there's no great way to know the vaccine. Oh, the other thing I think it is worth mentioning actually is the same thing that I just said about the children. It is true for adults that this vaccine appears to be offering protection for quite some time. And we think that it might be a couple of years at least.
Well, a somewhat related question. Ryan from Rancho Santa Margarita asks, as a vaccinated parent of kids who are not eligible for the vaccine, he's wondering what the risks and likelihood is of him taking the virus home now that he's going out more.
Oh, so and he's the adult and the children are not vaccinated and he's worried about bringing it home to the children. Is that right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think, yes, you have your risk. So if you're fully vaccinated, your risk of acquiring the illness sufficient to pass it on to anybody else is incredibly low. So this is the great thing about vaccination. It's doing what it's supposed to do. Even if you get sick, your ability to shed infectable virus to other people is markedly reduced. That's the whole goal of the vaccine anyway. I would not worry about that so much, but I would, you're going to pass on colds and flus and all this other stuff. So take the precautions you need to keep your hands clean. And, if somebody's visibly sick, they wow. should be wearing a mask and you stay away from them.
And a question from Diamond from Hollywood Hills, kind of about the timing of the vaccines. She says, Diamond says, I was scheduled to get my second home vax shot yesterday. However, I wasn't able to get it since they couldn't get to me. I'm now scheduled to get it on July 6, which is a week after my recommended 42 days after getting my first Moderna shot. Is this still fine?
Yes, it will be fine. That is within it's within the time frame. And it is true that even if you're vaccinated, you know, past the time frame that was originally recommended from CDC, because sometimes accidents like that happen throughout all of this, we think that that is still quite protective. You don't have to restart the whole series.
Wow. And then just one last question for you. We keep hearing about the Delta variant, that it's rapidly spreading in parts of the United States. How scary is it if we're fully vaccinated? What kinds of worries should we have about this Delta variant? And any idea how it affects children?
Yeah. It appears to be more transmissible and more severe, but all of that data needs to be really understood because in a place with poor infrastructure, and you're going to see more transmission and more severity. So we have to separate that out as to this virus. But yes, it does look like it might pass more easily. And so this vaccine, we're lucky because this country got, you know, the Moderna and the Pfizer, and that both vaccines appear to be effective against viruses enough, the new variant, Delta variant, as well as the others, enough that hospitalizations and cases, if you do get sick with it, is minimal. And the percent protection, you know how for the original strains, about 95%. For Delta, it looks about 70 to 75% protection. That's pretty darn good, actually, because flu vaccine, for example, any given year, percent protection anywhere from 30 to 50%. So you're talking about some pretty darn good
protection. Darn good. All right. Well, yeah. With those words, thank you, Dr. Shruti Gohil, MD, Professor of Medicine and Associate Medical Director for Epidemiology and Infection Prevention at UC Irvine's School of Medicine. Coming up next, we talk with Congressman Adam Schiff about the revelations that his personal data was subpoenaed by former President Trump's Justice Department. Air Talk will be back in a moment on 89.3 KPCC.
The LAS Spring Super Sweeps is happening now. You can win amazing prizes while supporting your source for local fact-based journalism. One lucky grand prize winner will get to choose a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Other prizes include an electric bike from Juice Bikes and $1,000 gas gift cards. Your donation of $60 gets you one entry to win, and the more you give, the more entries you get. Donate now at las.com/sweeps.